You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade.
Well, it's Tuesday once again, and you know what that means. It's time for the congregation to, well, congregate is what we do at the Church of the Lampshade. Glad you could join us this week, folks. Looking forward, as always, to a fun, insightful, thought-provoking show. I think we'll get it done once again this week. It's always my intention. It's always my hope. Trust me, if you listen to the show some weeks, and it's like, well, that show kind of sucked. Hey, you know, it's a filler episode. I don't know. I'd never intentionally give you a filler episode, but it's no recaps. I'm also trying not to do recap episodes or fillers, but sometimes maybe it works out that way. Bear with me. It's never intentional. It's always my intention that it'll be a fun, thought-provoking show. Of course, we will have the Christian-specific message here in just a little bit. I think we're going to have a fun message. It'll be fun if the Reverend can piece it all together and it not just look like a shotgun blast all over the place. But I'm confident we can get it done. Work with me here, folks. Work with me. Work with me. It'll be a great time. We'll get through it. It is the 72nd installment of the show. Can you believe it? We're getting it done, having a good time. As always, we like to open up acknowledging those who financially support the show. You know, you can feel powerless. And we've been reading stories here lately, Zero Hedge and V-Dare, cracked down on by the tech monopolies that so totally are not monopolies, we're told. You know, and we don't have to worry. Google Ads cannot demonetize us because y'all take care of that. You have grasped that power in your own hands. Google Ads cannot demonetize. They don't have that power over us. And, you know, that is really kind of a white pill when you think about it. And people sit here and say, yeah, but if you could do Google Ads, you could make a lot more money. Yes, but in exchange for what? They would have that power over you. So you have to watch what you say. You can't say as soon as somebody says they're a bad thinker. And boy, are the list of bad thinkers growing here as of late. Everybody is a bad thinker. While I'm well aware, I mean, I myself, not just me, but many others, but myself, we're going to talk about me. I've been saying for years that, you're all going to be called white supremacists. You're all going to be called Nazis. You're all going to be called racist. And even I didn't think it would accelerate at this rate. You know, when I was saying that, say what? Ancient history, maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I was thinking down the road. I didn't realize it in a matter of months. Basically, if you are white, you're now officially white supremacists because we have to reject whiteness. White people are evil. I mean, they're just out and out in people's face with it now. And yet it's sad because there's still people like running around acting like they can say or do something and they'll quit saying that. They won't think that of them. But a lot of people are starting to catch on. Don't get overly black pilled and be like the people are morons and people are stupid, but they may be catching on more than you think. Hey, we're going to feature a segment on the narrative the other morning where they were going to go around. Now, I didn't watch it because I knew what it would be, but they were going to go around and basically confront. They didn't word it that way, of course, but they were going to go around and confront random white people on the street to get their views on their whiteness and their white privilege and all of this. Well, I didn't bother watching because I know what it's going to be. Some normie is walking down the street and suddenly CBS News shoves a camera in their face and says, how do you feel about your white privilege, racism, and, the oppression of all of these people of color? And your average person is going to sit there and just simply, okay, their brains go into defense mode. And it's like, well, I'm going to say what I know I'm supposed to be saying so that I can get out of this, what I'm supposed to say so I know I can get out of this situation. They're damn sure not going to, what, you think they're going to go on national TV and be like, yeah, well, you know, I think white people have a reason to, you know, a right to exist too. You know, and if they did, they would, if it aired, they would be demonized. No doubt get fired because we're at this point now. Isn't it funny? What, a year or so ago? You could get fired from your job if you've been pinpointed by these people. And now people are getting pinpointed. They're getting targeted by the commies. And not only are they getting fired, not only are their wives and girlfriends getting fired, like their moms and their stepmoms and like anybody related to them is getting fired. And that really, you know, honestly, in a way, that pisses me off worse than the commies. Because, you know, the commies can do what they do. But it's other normies doing this. And probably a fair amount of them would, because if you asked them, they would be like, well, I'm a conservative. You know, you read these stories. What was it? The cop down in Atlanta, his stepmother got fired from her job, you know, and you got, there was another story where a guy was basically trying to drive down the street. How dare he? And yeah, he got fired. And I think his girlfriend got fired. Yeah, and you think about it, and a lot of the people doing these fires, if you ask the guy that fired him, you know, if you asked him in a vacuum, maybe I'm a conservative, probably has some of those gay ass come and take it stickers on the back of his vehicle or whatever. But as soon as one of his employees was targeted as a bad thinker by the commies, woof, jettison his ass. Because, you know, I don't need that friction. It amazes me, you know, people sit here and say we got to honor our heroes and we look at the heroes and the men of the past, like the men at the Alamo or the men on these statues or whoever. And they say we have to honor these heroes. But you honor those heroes by trying to be a hero yourself. You understand what I'm saying? You honor these people by standing up when it's your turn. It's easy to sit here and say the founding fathers and those that came before us would be rolling in their graves with anger if they looked at these commies mobs. No, they would not, because those who seek destruction have always existed. They would be rolling in their graves angry at you for being so afraid. Afraid that what? They're going to call you names? Afraid that you might lead? We honor the men who fought to the death in a battle they could not ever win. Well, now it's your turn. They might fire me from my job and call me names. And people might give me sideways looks in town. Look, I've been on the receiving end of all of that, folks. And no, it's not fun. It's not pleasant. But when you look at it in the context of men who, say, for instance, at the Alamo, and they knew they weren't going to win. They were hoping maybe reinforcements would show up, you know, and they wouldn't die. But in the back of their minds, they knew it was a battle that, you know, they couldn't win. So they fought to the death. And yet, what, people today are afraid that, you know, somebody in the media might say they're a racist, a white supremacist, which nobody even knows what the hell that means. I don't know. You know, it's just, it amazes me. You know, I was thinking the other day about, you know, because around here, you know, this is a Texas thing, and I get to assuming that everybody understands the Texas thing, you know, and there's this piece of Texas history where, you know, one of the culminating events of Texas independence from Mexico was they had a little cannon in this town, and the government told them, you know, well, you got to hand that cannon over. And they made a flag, and it said, it had a picture of a cannon on it. Someone drew it. It said, come and take it. You ain't getting it. And so people now, you see all these people drive around with these stickers that say, come and take it. And it'll have a picture of an AR-15 on it. Come and take it. Just try to come and take my guns. Well, when it comes to your statues and your history and your culture and your society, guess what? They're coming and taking it. Driving around with a gay ass sticker and they're coming and taking it. And what? You're afraid to even speak up. You're afraid to even support those who are speaking up. You don't want to be associated with them. You'll be a bad thinker. You might lose your job. Don't be LARPing like you're the heroes of old when you can't even support those who are standing up to the front. Ah, got off on a tangent. Anyway, getting to the listener supporter mailbag. We have three supporters this week. Little thin. Usually the way that works is when we have a thin week, it means the next week we'll have a whole bunch. It's the way it works. Three supporters, including Bitcoin Anon. Appreciate it. Bitcoin Anon coming through week in, week out, and really much appreciated. Mr. T, not reading on air as requested, which I wouldn't have anyway. It's kind of personal information. But yes, received. Very much do appreciate it. And finally from Nick, dear Grandpa, a few shekels. Thanks for your stalwart example. Fine sermons and hilarious commentary. Be well and God bless, Nick. And yeah, I can say very much appreciate it. It's what we do here. We try to have fun. We try to be informative. We're trying to uncut Christianity. I think in our Christian-specific message here later on in the show, it'll be a little clearer. Maybe we'll even paint a clearer picture of why that's important outside of just simply in the context of religion, in the context of why even an unbeliever could look at it and go, oh, yeah, well, I can see why these, you know, why this is an important thing. Because I think a lot of people don't understand it. They don't understand why that even matters if they're a non-believer. It's going to be one of the things we're going to shoot for. If I can pull it off, it may just wind up sounding like gibberish because, you know, it's not like I really plan these things out. I was laying in bed trying to go to sleep last night. And I'm like, what is going to be the sermon tomorrow? I have no idea. No clue. And then, anyway, we'll get into that. Anyway, once again, thank you. If you want to be a part of supporting the show, information's at the bottom of the description page. We got snail mail. We got Bitcoin. I'll take any kind of cryptocurrency because I'm not proud. So if you need an address for that, drop me an email. Be more than happy to get you an address for that. I'll try my best to take your Zcash off your hands. Your OMG or whatever the Ripple, not proud. We'll take your 20 cent a piece cryptocurrency. Pride has gone to the wind. I will take ox. I don't care. But anyway. All right. Rolling off into the regular part of the show because time is fine. And I want to make the most of every minute. I really do look forward to sitting down and visiting with y'all weekend with me. I mean, it's a lot of work. But, you know, I'm not going to lie. It's a lot of work. It's exhausting. When I finish the show, I'm always just mentally and spiritually drained. I'm just tired. You know, start the show with great energy. By the end of the show, it's like, yeah, come back next week. I'm out. Yeah, but I do look forward to it week in and week out. I enjoy these conversations, and I do look at them as conversations, even though it comes across, I suppose, as monologues. I do look forward to sitting down and congregating with, you know, fellowshipping, as it were, with y'all week in and week out. Tough. It's tough. I tell you, it's tough to have anything to talk about because all the news is COVID and commies. That's all we get now. COVID and commies. Of course, you know, I'm on the Friday installment of the Daily Nationalist with Sven Longshanks. I like to call it Clown World in Review. And it's tough. We can't hardly find any stories. You've probably noticed that the quality of those shows has suffered a little bit, and it's not intentional. We understand. But it is tough to go out there and find a lighthearted something that we can kind of laugh about. We've almost thrown that out the window. We just find something. We're just trying to find something that's not about COVID and commies. It's almost impossible. It's the entire news cycle. And whether we like it or not, much of the news is dictated by the mainstream media. It is what it is because that's the power they wield. So we wade through it. We try to find subjects that aren't COVID and commies, but it's tough. It's tough. And we watch these cycles, and I'm watching it now. And so many people are just, you know, they focus on each event like it's in a vacuum. Oh, my gosh, they're pulling the statues down now. What is with that? Oh, my gosh, they're burning buildings now. What is with that? Oh, my gosh, they're attacking people who are simply trying to drive down the road. What is with that? Oh, my gosh, now they're ordering that everybody has to wear a mask. What is with that? Got to keep the big picture because it does. We've talked about this before, but it all goes together. You know, even here, you would think in Texas, it ain't like that, but it is. They're pushing the commie thing here, too. Because, see, they're dialing back the commie mobs right now. They're getting dialed back out of the news cycle, and they're dialing the COVID back up. They're dialing the corona back up now. Oh, we've had this huge outbreak. The numbers are skyrocketing of people testing positive for COVID. Well, of course, because you're testing more people at this point. Everybody's been exposed to it. I don't want to be tested because if I'm tested, I'm probably going to come back positive. And then they're what? They're really going to try to force me to stay in my house. against my will. We won't call it house arrest. It's quarantine. Everybody's been exposed. Of course, the numbers are going up. It's stupid. This is common sense. And when Trump made that off-the-cuff remark about, I told him, slow down the testing. Slow down, the media is outraged. But anybody with a half a thinking brain is like, well, yeah, that's because the more people they test, of course, the more positives they're going to get. It's not going to change anything. They act like, oh, well, the more people are testing positive, that is a bad thing. Is it just a thing? Is a reality you can acknowledge? How many of the people you're testing, by the way, are asymptomatic? They never tell us that, do they? I saw them. They're like, oh, we got a video chat here with this young woman. She tested positive for corona. Nobody ever said young people can't get corona. This is the latest thing. You know, they're like, well, the demographics that are starting to test positive have shifted younger now. Younger people, 18 to 25, they're testing positive for COVID. Yeah, well, no shit. Nobody ever said that's because they're going to be the last. Let me ask you this. What age group is going to be the last one to go and get tested? Old people are going to freak out, and they're at the doctors more often. They're at the doctors. Who goes to the doctor? You talk to an old person in your life. And what is the conversation? You have a grandparent or your parents are old, depending on your own age. And you call up nanny and you're like, hey, nanny, how's it going? What'd you do this week? And it's always going to be the same thing when you talk to old people. Well, I went to the doctor because that's what old people do. They spend all their time going to the doctor. And if they go to the doctor, guess what? They're going to get a COVID test. So, of course, the initial testing was mostly it's old people. Well, yeah, that's who's getting tested. Because they were saying the only other people that could get tested is if you had symptoms. And a young person's like, well, I feel fine. I ain't going to get tested. But now they've got enough tests available. They can start testing more people. The last people in line to get tested are what? The younger people. People 18 to 25. We're seeing a spike in that age group. Okay? Nobody said young people can't catch it. Was anybody ever going around saying that? The biggest COVID skeptics in the world for the lockdown, against this lockdown. Did anybody ever said, this is stupid because young people cannot catch this disease? Nobody ever said that. Absolutely nobody. You want to talk about the worst, shittiest straw man argument ever made? Ha ha, y'all were saying that young people couldn't catch it, but look now. What? Never said that? What the hell are you on about? They're just hoping most people don't notice. Yeah, I saw on the narrative, we're video chatting with this young woman, and see, she went and partied with her friends, and now she's tested positive for COVID. What do you think, young thought? And she's like, oh my gosh, like, you know, I was like, I guess I was like stupid, you know, because like, I just wanted to go have fun with my friends, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, bitch, you feel fine. What are you even on about? Oh, because it's an opportunity to have attention, I guess. You feel fine. Well, she doesn't look like she's on her deathbed to me. So what's even the point? You're showing us that younger people can catch it too. Nobody ever thought they couldn't. But if your message is young people are going to catch it and they're going to die, it's not working because bitch looks like she feels fine to me. Don't worry about the case of herpes you caught while you were out partying, darling. It's the COVID you need. It's the COVID, even though you feel fine. COVID and commies, it's all we get. It's all we get in the news cycle. Such a nasty news cycle. It's no fun. Tired of it. They dial back the commie mobs, and they give us more COVID. And see, they eased it back here in Texas. They eased it back. But see, now the numbers have gone up. So our wonderful governor, you know, he's shut the bars back down. And there's talk of that, you know, they're going to do, and many cities have already done this whole thing. You can't go into business unless you wear a mask. One of the things that I've never, you know, I've never taken the whole mark of, I'd never really taken the whole mark of the beast thing to be a literal thing like most people do. I never really took that as a literal thing. Like, you're going to have a 666 tattoo on your hand. And you're thinking, well, how would that work? Because like literally everybody would know. If the government said tomorrow, you're going to have to line up and get a 666 tattoo on your forehead, everybody would be like, wow, the prophecy came true. But we know from the scripture that that ain't the way prophecy works. And it rolls out in a way where it's absolutely undeniable while it's happening. You have to get it to, well, get it. I never took it as literal. I tend towards, as I look at the world around me right now, I tend to think of the mark as the submission. See, you are branded. You submit to whatever they demand of you. You submit to the lie. Because if there's one thing that is of the devil, if there's one thing that is a quote unquote mark of the beast, it is the lie. Jesus told us he's a liar and a murderer. The truth is not in him. He is of the lie. He's incapable of anything, not a lie. And the narrative, which gets dumber and dumber every day, is always based on lies. So now the latest submission thing is they're talking about, and some cities have already enacted this, is you've got to wear a mask. You can't go in any business. And I'm sitting there thinking, let's see, you can't buy, sell, trade, have a job, or, you know, buy food. Nothing unless you have the mark. Unless you have a mask. The two sound so familiar. As somebody on, as some fellow inmate at Gabschwitz said, you know, if you take the S out and put an R there, whoa, look there, you got to have a mark. Very good observation. I mean, you know, a lousy observation, because it does, it rhymes that much, doesn't it? To submit, do what you're told. Doesn't matter if it's a lie, embrace it, you have to go on with the lie. It's like we've seen it with the commie protests. You got to get down and kneel. Kneel, submit. But they don't care whether you believe it or not. In fact, if you don't believe it and you do it anyway, that's even better. Because they forced you to submit. They forced you to embrace the lie. It's discouraging because they wield this power. And that's the reality. I said just a few minutes ago, we wind up talking about this crap, COVID and commies, because that's what the media talks about. And that is what everybody is talking about. You know, it's aggravating in the sense that, you know, it's like you can see how they have the power still, that they can control what everybody is talking about. But this is what's on everybody's mind. It would be stupid if I sat down here and did a show and, you know, well, we're going to discuss, you know, and insert irrelevant topic that nobody gives a shit about right now. But hey, at least we're not talking about COVID and commies. Talking about everybody talking about. Don't get discouraged. I get discouraged. I say that as somebody who sometimes gets pretty damn discouraged. But if you look for them, there are things that are encouraging. People are afraid. People, I'm talking about normies. Normies that they're more of them get it than you think, dude. You know, I myself, you know, it's funny because not that long ago, you know, I was labeled an evil, racist, white supremacist. And all these normies, all of a sudden they didn't know who I was. People I'd known for years, whatever, didn't know who I was. Oh my gosh, he's a bad thinker. I don't want to be targeted. Not like that. And now, in these crazy days, slowly but surely, some of those same people are starting to, you know, circle around and be like, look around. Like, make sure nobody sees them talking to an evil thinker. And they're like, what the hell is going on? Because, you see, they get that it's the same people doing it. Is the same people, and they don't like what those people are doing. See, they know who it is. They won't say it out loud. But they get that the same people that have been running around calling people evil white supremacists, racists, bad thinkers that should be shunned by society, they get that they're the ones that are doing this now. They get that they're the ones that are now, wow, everybody is that now. Doesn't have quite the buzz that it had before. Now that anybody just trying to drive down the street and they refuse to get out of their car and join the mob, or they refuse to get down on their knees and apologize for being white, they're a white supremacist, racist, whatever. Now, you see, they get that. And it's like, well, wait, that guy's one of the designated bad thinkers. He probably knows what the hell is going on. Let me slip over here, quietly ask this guy, hey, what the hell is with all of this? It's like I'm just a information terminal. Like, oh, look, there's an information terminal. We can punch a button here and it'll tell us where we're at because I'm lost. I'm wandering around this big airport or whatever. Now I'm lost. But there's a kiosk, an automated kiosk. Push the button. And wait, the button just keeps the little automated voice just keeps saying, I told you so. I told you so. I told you. Told you so. It seems they keep making great strides. It seems like the plan is all going according to their schedule. But it does till it doesn't. Don't surrender in the middle of the in the middle of the match. I mean, don't go AFK. I mean, you know, don't intentionally go AFK in the middle of the match just because, you know, it looks like your team is getting, you know, blown out. You know, I mean, you could still, you're still in the game. You're still in the game. A lot of people are still in the game. All their best laid out plans, yeah, they work until they don't. I don't care if they're using cutting edge world, you know, computer simulations to plan all of this out. I don't give a shit because no computer can truly grasp and factor in the human factor. And in fact, I would say it makes it a more fragile plan than what they believe. This is where outliers were, because any sort of, say if this was all planned out, I don't know if it was or not, but say this was all planned out, like with computers, like, you know, behavioral simulations. If we do this and then do this and then the people will do this and da 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 da, you know, that all depends on group behaviors. And it's, you know, probably fairly accurate, fairly trustworthy. But you see, if you've been at this for a while, you've run into the outlier thing multiple times, you know, like what, way back in ancient history, say, you know, 2015, and whopping 5 years ago. And, you know, like if you got into a discussion, like, say, about black crime, I'm just pulling that out of the air. You know, say you got into a discussion back at before you could, you know, when you could still have an account on Twitter, and you would get into a discussion with somebody about, you know, blacks and crime and the FBI statistics. And, you know, you would always get somebody whip out the outlier, you know, well, yeah, well, I have a black friend who's a doctor. That disproves what you say about the group. You're well aware of outliers. You know, there are people that don't fit that group paradigm. And just saying, suppose this is all planned out on a big computer simulation. Well, it would have to just basically be based on group behaviors. But here's the thing. A handful of outliers can throw a huge wrench into that entire plan, because the computer can't plan for the outliers. You see, the computer can't figure in the outliers. The computer can look at group behaviors, and if you do this and you do this, and then people will do that, you know. And this is assuming that's even what's happening. I don't necessarily think that that's what's happening. Maybe not. I don't know. But the point is, I look at what is being done and whether it's simply being planned out by people, whether this is a great plot by Satan himself. I suspect it's a little of both. The fact of the matter is it's a much more fragile thing than what you think. It looks like it's a giant unstoppable bulldozer, which is running over your society, which is running over the people. Nobody wants this. A bunch of what? Screaming LARPers. You know, I mean, you look at all these protests and they try to put the blacks out front because that's who you're supposed to get mad at. They want you to hate the blacks. They try to stick the blacks up front, but you see all these white faces in there. And yes, I realize that they're, you know, white on some of those, but for the purpose of our discussion here, that's more or less irrelevant. You see all these white faces in here. The point is, and as always the case, I have to reel myself. I start getting way off. I start chasing threads here because it's just the way I think things out. So I'm going to reel this back in. It's a more fragile thing than what it looks like. It looks right now like a behemoth. Well, part of that is simply because That's what the media is telling you. There are incidents that are happening right now where people are standing up to this and say, no, you're not. People are standing up and say, you're not taking that statue down. And they go away. But you see, the media doesn't tell you about that. The media is not going to tell you about that happening. You see, they're only going to amplify the message that makes them look stronger so that you continue to get blackpilled. Well, they just keep winning. Well, according to who? Them. Well, of course. If you are a country in a literal war, you know, and you are, let's say you are in a country, you are a country and you're at literal war with this other country and say you're kicking their ass and, you know, you just, man, you're gaining 100 miles of territory. You're just steamrolling over their army. And the country, if you lived in the nation that's being defeated, you would turn on their news and it'd be like, ha ha, the heroic people's army once again thwarted an attack with a tactical retreat. Yeah, I mean, yeah, a rearward advance. Yeah, I mean, the narrative is always going to be that they're winning. I'm not saying that they're not making, you know, advances, but I'm saying that the media is their propaganda wing. So, of course, everything they're going to tell you is they're winning. You think the media is going to turn it on and say, well, the commie mob was thwarted today when they wanted to take down a statue and a group of men showed up armed and said, get the hell out of our town. And so they fled. They're not going to report that story to you, folks. They're going to give you dramatic footage of some city where the police have cordoned off and won't let anyone else in but the mob. And the mob rips down the statue, spray paints, takes a shit on it, and jumps around like a bunch of degenerates celebrating another great victory. And you're looking at that going, nobody will stop these people. Well, people are stopping them, but they're not going to tell you about that. The media is the propaganda wing of the communist revolution. Don't expect them to sit there and report losses. That ain't the way it works. It's like when Stalin said there are no POWs from the Soviet Union, only traitors. You know, there are no losses, according to the media, only wins. And while, yeah, you have to, you know, tune into the narrative sometimes and at least try to get a feel for what's going on, don't lose sight of the fact that they're always going to tell you they're winning. Because that's the side that they're on. Who out there, even the most brain dead normie, gets it at this point. You know, I mean, just a run-of-the-mill, like, cookie-cutter NPC MAGA person will sit there and say, lying media, fake news, fake news. You know, they even get it. Well, they should get it. I don't know. Maybe some of them don't. But, of course, the media is the propaganda wing for the communist revolution. They're only going to tell you about their victories. Somebody runs them off. Somebody shows up and sets up a barrier around a statue and tells them get the hell out of the town and they flee, you're going to get that on the media. That's not going to be on tonight's installment of CBS Evening News. They're going to tell you about that. You see, they're only going to report their victories. Don't get so caught up that you start believing their bullshit, folks. Don't do that. I mean, yes, you can watch this stuff, you can read this stuff, but understand that you are reading, you are watching the propaganda wing for the communist revolution. Take it with a grain of salt. I'm not sitting here telling you everything's going to be okay, but I'm telling you, this is a lot much more fragile thing than what they want you to think it is. That's what makes it such a joke. That the government acts like, oh, we can't do anything to stop this. We all know. Everybody knows that's bullshit. Everybody knows. It's a fragile thing. The government could come in. We had that whole news hoax thing with the NASCAR thing. And they swooped in 15 FBI agents. 15 FBI agents to investigate a loop tied in the end of a garage pull door rope. Now, you know. It gets a little convoluted because the black driver wasn't the one that initially reported it. NASCAR was the one that ran out and said, oh my gosh, look here. Well, yeah, we found a loop. But they pushed the black driver to the forefront so they could have the photo op of him driving out there with all the drivers in support. What do you know? Big corporations, all a part of the narrative, aren't they? Once again. But once again, to reel it back in, 15 FBI agents, 15 to swoop in to investigate a garage door pull rope. If you arrested six organizers of this thing, and they know who they are. I mean, come on. They know who they are. There isn't anybody out there that doesn't think the federal government can figure out, find out who is funding, who is organizing and doing this communist revolution. They just won't. There's a fact of the matter. They just won't. Oh, they're steamrolling over. You could arrest six guys and take them out of the equation and the whole thing would probably fall apart. And that's a fact. But they won't. So what does that tell you? Just as the media is the propaganda wing of the communist revolution, probably the vast majority, if not the totality, almost said totalitarian, but that would have fit too, almost the near totality of your government, state, federal, local, is the enforcement arm of the communist revolution. Let's talk about that for a minute, because that's an interesting thing to think about. The enforcement arm of the communist revolution. The communists are showing up. They're pulling down statues. They're destroying public property. They're burning buildings. And we hear virtually no arrests. But yet, if you show up, if a group of guys shows up to try to stop it, If a group of guys said, you know what, I'm watching here, I'm watching local news and they're burning the city down and police aren't doing anything. So I got my boys together. We're going to go in there and stop this shit. We can do it. We all know that the police will be there lickety split. We've seen the videos where people are trying to drive down the road. The truck driving one really sticks with me. And that was one of the early incidents. Guy trying to drive his truck down the interstate where a truck is supposed to be. And they're blocking the road. The media tried to report it as he crashed through the peaceful protesters. But that's bullshit. If a Mack truck, if a Freightliner, even a Freightliner, if a semi truck is crashing through protesters, they're not dragging him out of the cab and beating the shit out of him. Because it ain't stopping. But the fact that he stopped tells you that the narrative that he was crashing through peaceful protesters was bullshit. He stopped to avoid hitting the violent mob. They drag him out of the truck. No police. Nobody around. They drag him out of the truck, kick his ass. Then the cops show up to arrest the truck driver for getting his ass kicked, I suppose. Their enforcement arm. Even if they decide to simply do nothing. You know, I mean, there was audio I saw in one of Tucker Carlson's clips where the woman is with her daughter is calling 911 because her car's being attacked by a mob. And the 911 operator's like, oh, there's nothing we can do. I suggest you contact City Hall and complain to them, you know, voice your concerns. That is support for that is enforcement of the commie mob just by staying home, just by doing nothing, just by following orders. The greatest plans, the greatest computer programming, whatever the hell, the human factor is random because of the outliers. Yes, groups will behave in a way that you can pretty reliably predict. We've all been there, you know. We've all just been there using our reasoning. You can guess how groups of people will behave. But the outliers will always throw a wrench in the works. The question is, how big of a wrench? How big of a wrench can the outliers throw into their well-laid-out plans? Don't get totally black-pilled over this. The communist revolution is not a foregone conclusion. It's not a foregone conclusion that you're going to be conquered by social justice grads and skinny pants, you know, and fat feminists. I mean, that is not a foregone conclusion, folks. They wish to project strength. They wish to project strength, but the fact of the matter is they're very weak. This is weak sauce. It's just that they're backed up by the enforcement arm, which is government on all levels. They're backed up with the propaganda wing, which is the media. But as far as the rest of it, it's weak sauce. This is, you know, don't, like I say, don't go AFK in the middle of the match here. Just because, you know, somebody's on the mic shit talking you about how they're kicking your team's ass. Because that's not necessarily the reality. And we're going to have to wrap up. We got to get into the sermon this week. But one of the things early on, one of these demands they were making early on that I thought was funny. I really did. Thought was funny. Was this demand. We want to abolish the police. And it's like, no, they don't. You know, the police aren't there to protect the rest of the society from them. You know, the police are there, then we've seen this carried out time and time again. The police are there to protect them from the rest of society. And I'm not talking about quote unquote extremists here. I'm talking about like normal people are fed up with this shit. Seriously, you go around in your regular life and talk to normal people that you work with that are fed up with this shit. Normal people. That you know, friends, people at your job, because again, everybody's stuck talking about COVID and commies. If you removed the threat of the average guy that you say, the average guy at your job that you work with, assuming you're not surrounded by, you know, commies, your average guy, assuming you have a blue collar job, you have one of those jobs that these people look down on because you actually work with your hands. Oh, my God. So stupid. You talk with the guys at your job. If you suddenly abolished the police and there was nobody standing between the guys at your job and these assholes. If you told everybody, all the regular working men on your construction site, hey, guess what? They abolished the police and nothing will happen if we go put an end to this crap. You know, the guys that attacked your wife's car last week, nothing's going to happen now if we get out there. You imagine what would come of that? And they know this. They know this. It's all a big line of shit. They know this. Make no mistake. We got to wrap this up. We got to get into the Christian specific, the sermon this week. Make no mistake. They fear the people. This is what this is. It looks like something else. Everybody talks about Charlottesville as a turning point. But again, everybody looks at things as one-off incidents and they look at them in a vacuum. But look at the big picture of what led up to Charlottesville. What was it, Berkeley or wherever out in California? Remember when based stick man was a thing? You know, these people were going out there, used to going out there and jacking with people. And all of a sudden, people started fighting back. You know, you would picture people just laying these people out, smacking them with stuff. And that threw a wrench in things, you see. It threw a wrench in things. That's why Charlottesville wound up having to be orchestrated and narrated the way it was. They had to put a stop to people fighting back from this stuff. They had to put a stop from people thinking they could stand up to the mob. Make an example. So they had to put an end to that. And it worked. I mean, people, you know. But, well, I take that back. That's not really correct. Because, as we said before, look, there are people standing up. Normal, day-to-day people are standing up. You're just not going to hear about it. You're going to hear about it because, see, that's one of the wrenches that gets thrown in the works. They want you thinking, we can't do anything. They show up and tear down our statue that's been on the courthouse square forever. Hell, we just have to let them. They want you to think that. That way there's no resistance because they fear resistance. Because they don't have the strength that they want you to think they have. It's propaganda. It's all propaganda. They're just gaslighting you. And again, I'm not saying, oh, everything's fine. But again, don't listen to them. Don't believe what they're telling you. Because the fact of the matter is, you're normal, average, everyday working people are getting angry. They're getting really angry. And those people, guess what? That's what we refer to as the masses. And the masses, regardless of what the narrative, screw the narrative. That's propaganda. That's bullshit. The masses are starting to turn. The masses, the keel, the rudder on that ship, it's starting to change heading. Because deep down underneath, there may not seem like it at first. They're still at that biting their tongue and grumbling stage. But underneath the surface, the masses are getting angry. We got to wrap up on that note. We got to get into this week's Christian sermon. It's going to be fun. Time to pause, check the coffee level, get all ready. So get in here, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon. Always the most anticipated part of the show. This week's sermon here at the Church of the Lampshade. As you get settled in here, as I kind of alluded to at the beginning of the show, this is going to, you're just going to have to bear with me because this, our sermon this week is going to seem really, really random. And we're going to shotgun this thing. But the idea is if everything goes according to plan, at the end of it, we're going to kind of pull everything back together. And hopefully it'll all make sense. So we're going to open up. We're going to read some scripture here. And again, this is going to be all over the place. We're going to be skipping. And then we're going to get on to our discussion and we'll come back to the plan is to come back to the scripture we read and why that's relevant. Because as we go through this scripture reading, it's going to seem really, you know, like I say, really random because we're rocking Old Testament this week. And what we're going through is just some brief historical records. There's no great spiritual meaning on the surface of this. It's just a historical record. But I think it holds something that we can really get something out of. Anyway, just bear with me. Don't tune out and be like, well, this is too random. This doesn't even make no sense to me. So those of you who like to follow along with your Bibles, we're going to be in 2 Kings. We're going to be stick with the chapter 15, but we're going to be all over the place in chapter 15. Because, again, this is a historical record and there's a lot of redundancy here. And to make the point we want to make, we're going to be jumping around. So we'll start off in chapter 15, verse 1. And again, with some of these names, don't be like, you pronounced that wrong. You know, that's really irrelevant. So in the 27th year, Jeroboam, king of Israel, began Azariah, son of Amaziah, king of Judah, to reign. 16 years old was he when he began to reign, and he reigned 2 and 50 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Jehoiada of Jerusalem. Now, you know I said that wrong. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all his father Amaziah had done, save that the high places were not removed. The people sacrificed and burnt incense still on the high places. Now, I want you to skip over to verse 17 with me. Same book, same chapter. In the 9 and 13 year of Azariah, king of Judah, began Manan, the son of Jadai, to reign over Israel, and reigned 10 years in Samaria. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. He departed not from his ways, from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. Now skip with me. I told you we were going to be skipping around. We're skip forward to verse 23. In the 15th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Pekahiah, the son of Manaam, began to reign over Israel in Samaria and reigned 2 years. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. He departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. And finally, skip forward with me to verse 32. In the 2nd year of Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, began Jehoram, the son of Uzziah, king of Judah, to reign. 25 years old was he when he began to reign, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Jerusha, the daughter of Zadok. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord. He did according to all that his father Uzziah had done. Howbeit, the high places were not removed. The people sacrificed and burned incense still in the high places. He built the higher gate of the house of the Lord. Now, we're going to stop there. And like I said, we're just going to kind of leave it at that. We're going to come back to this and why this is relevant to us today. But I want you to kind of just get this. There's not really a deep spiritual meaning. This is just a historical record that's been laid out here. But I read this at random the other day, and it just kept sticking in my mind. You know, I mean, it just kept sticking with me, and I couldn't figure out why. It's like, what is it about this is sticking with me? It's just really kind of a boring deal of scripture. You know, you read some scripture and you expect them to see some kind of, you know, get some kind of spiritual insight, you know, and you read something like this. It's like, it's just like reading a history book. But there was something about it just kept sticking in my mind for days. Sticking in my mind, I'm like, why? And as I was laying there in bed last night, still like, you know, what are we going to discuss? What's tomorrow's sermon going to be? Because I have no clue. This kept sticking in my mind. And so I started pondering it and wondering why. Why is this sticking in my mind? And it started to kind of all come together. And from there, I started thinking about some other things. So like I said, we'll come back to that and why I think this is relevant. This historical record is relevant to us today. But because we're told in the scripture there's nothing new under the sun. So this has relevance for us today, believe it or not. Now, as we move forward, and like I said, we'll get back to this here in a minute. As we move forward, as Christian believers, we talk about these things all the time. And needless to say, you know, we talk about not living in sin. You know, you got to try, you know, you try to not live in sin. You try to live as in tune with God as you can. And for the unbeliever, you know, and even for believers, sometimes you get this construct in your mind of this adversarial relationship with God, because so many people mistake sin for enjoyment. You know, you do. You've probably caught, I guarantee if you at some point in time, you had that, you've got sucked into that mindset, you know? When you're struggling with temptation to sin and you know it's sin and you want to stay away from it, but yet you're tempted by it and you have that contradiction in your mind and that struggle in your mind and the spiritual nature versus the physical nature. And you can wind up constructing an adversarial, you know, paradigm, as it were, with God. You want to really, what it comes down to, you're tempted because part of you wants to do it and part of you perceives that as pleasure. And it gets to where like, well, God just doesn't want you to enjoy life. I can't do this thing. And the devil will tell you, it's either you enjoy it. You know you enjoy that. God doesn't want you to do it because just doesn't want you to have any fun. He doesn't want you to experience any pleasure. He wants you to enjoy life. And if you struggle and wind up constructing this adversarial relationship with God in the back of your mind as a Christian believer, if you fall into that trap, how much more so the unbeliever? For the unbeliever looks and is, you talk about sin and not sinning, and so, but they have been sucked in by the world, and the world has told them these things are pleasurable. All of this talk about God doesn't want you to sin, just be God doesn't want you to enjoy your life. God wants you to be miserable. Look at the prophets. Look at even the apostles. They lived in misery. They were persecuted. They got thrown in prison. They were living in misery. God just wants you to be miserable. You can choose to be a Christian. You better hope that's real, because you're throwing your whole life away to misery instead of enjoyment. You're taking a risk. Taking a risk, you're denying yourself all of this pleasure and enjoyment in life and just hoping that after you die, maybe there will be some kind of reward. But what if there isn't? What if you're wrong? What if this was all made up by people? Then you didn't get to enjoy life. You didn't get to experience all of this enjoyment. Oh, that devil's a liar, isn't he? And by extension, those who be deceived by him become liars as well, as they repeat what he has essentially told them. While sin in the moment can at times be pleasurable. I mean, a heroin addict is enjoying the heck out of it after the needle goes in the arm. Feels good, man. Whew. Feels good. I done shot that in my arm and now I'm feeling good. All my troubles have melted away. pleasurable at the moment. But whether you're a believer or not, does anybody listening to this, is anybody listening to this right now think that, well, being addicted to heroin is a great thing in your life? Why not? It's pleasurable, right? Well, no, anybody listening to this, whether you're a Christian believer or not, it's irrelevant. Anybody listening to this is going, well, that's retarded. It will destroy your life. Yes, but it was pleasurable when it went in the arm. Look at him. He's laying there in bliss. Got a smile on his face, drool running out, and he just shit his pants. He's in bliss. Who are we to interrupt him? He's enjoying his life right now. But the casual observer can say he's destroying his life. When you look at people who are consumed by degeneracy, and that's an extreme example because anybody can see it. That's why I wanted to use it. Anybody can look at the heroin addict and say, this guy's killing himself. Oh, but you just don't want him to. Who are you? You just don't want him to enjoy the pleasure of shooting up heroin. You're like, it's not pleasure. He's killing himself. And that's what sin does. Use an extreme example because it makes it clear. It's easier to understand. But understand this. This is what sin does to you. It might be pleasurable in the moment. Sure. God doesn't want you to sin because he doesn't want you to kill yourself. He is the guy standing there saying, quit sticking the needle in your arm, dumbass. You're killing yourself. Look in the mirror. Everybody else sees it. And you're the one going, God doesn't want me to have any fun. Where's my hit, man? The same rule applies to all sin. It's not enjoyment. It's death. It's death. Death is called corruption. Another word for death used in the scripture is corruption. And we're told in the scripture that the wages of sin is what? Death. It's not just, well, God's going to cast you into hell for committing sin. No, he's telling you in this life, it will destroy you in this life if you give yourself over to sin. I mean, of course you're going to struggle with sin. You're alive. You're stuck in this corrupted body, this corruptible body, this temporal realm of this world. Of course you're going to struggle with sin. That's not the same as chasing after sin. It's not the same as indulging in sin. We use the heroin addict example because it was an easy to do example, but it applies everywhere. Look at the faces. We were talking earlier, for instance, about these commie mobs. And look at the average person. And I'm not talking about the blacks they stick out front. I'm talking about the white faces in there. To me, a lot of this, the blacks are almost irrelevant in this. They're being used as props. They're being told these things. They're being stuck out there. They're props. They're the straw man for you. They're the effigy for you to get mad at. But look at the white faces involved in it. Look at how many of these people, you could look at people like this, you could look at them and you're like, there's something wrong. You can't even put your finger on it, but there's something wrong with them. Something deep down inside of you looks at these people's like twisted faces and all of this rage and anger and physically they don't look right. They just don't look like something in your instinctual level tells you there's something wrong here. There's something off about this person. You can see people like that in your day-to-day life, maybe in town, you're at the store, and you look at people in there, you will see people sometimes, and you don't know the details of their life. You don't know the way they live their life. But you can look at them and something ticks in the back of your mind and you're looking at that person and you're like, there's something off about them. And you can't even put it into words. But it like triggers you on a spiritual nature. You just know there's something wrong with that person. You see, if you pile degeneracy and sin on yourself, when you just throw it to the wind, abandon God, and jump into the lake of degeneracy, more degeneracy, I got to do this. More wickedness. What more perverted thing can I do now? That's not enough. I got to do something more and more. It affects them. You look at them until they're destroying themselves. It's as clear as the heroin addict. Maybe they're not on drugs. Maybe they are. But just living a life of utter degeneracy, you can look at them and see that they're destroying themselves. It's plain that they don't look right. They don't look healthy. Maybe if they went to the doctor, they might get a checkup and say, you're okay. But you can look at them because the spiritual unhealthiness reflects in the physical. It reflects in the way their mental health is. They're unable to reason. They're unable to have a logical thought. They just simply bounce from here to there. They're not healthy. And you register that on an instinctual level. Is there any hope for people like that? Well, of course. Technically, there is. But it requires them, you know, the more engaged in degeneracy and sin you become, the harder it is because you have to reject that. And the further in you get, it's like walking on a long trip. Say if you had to walk on a long trip and you've walked for years down this path. And then suddenly somebody says, hey, here's a roadmap. Look, for the last 2 years, you've been walking every day and you went the wrong way. Here it is. I got a map for you. The reason things don't seem right around you, the reason you're upset all the time is because instinctually you're looking around and you realize you took the wrong road. It's hard for that person to accept. They don't want to. The longer you go down that road, the more immersed in sin, the more immersed in degeneracy you become, the harder it is to reject that because it means rejecting what? All of those things that you've incorporated as a part of your life. The more of a person's life they have to reject in order to come to the truth, the harder it is for them to come to the truth. If they're able to do that and turn away from these things, then yes, there is hope. God is there. Christ is there offering hope. But I wouldn't hold my breath because it's a very difficult thing for people to do. The hardest things for anybody to do is to admit they're wrong. The more you go around this nation, not just here in the U.S., but you look at the Western nations falling and you look at how a lot of the people just appear, just the way they look, you can tell they're sick, maybe not physically, but spiritually they're sick. You can't even put your finger on it. Why do they not look right to me? Because there's spiritual sickness. They have indulged themselves further and further sin, further and further degeneration. And sin is destruction. It's not pleasure. It is just death. Literally, in this life, eating you up from the inside out. Getting back to this historical record scripture that seems completely irrelevant to what we're talking about at the beginning. Reason I finally figured out, the reason this was sticking in my mind is we went through this historical record. We're talking, of course, about kings in that time and not the democracy thing, you know. But it rhymed to me. I mean, you have these examples of, okay, you have a leader, you have a king, so you have a system. You have this king, and he's a real asshole. He's a real evil. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did all of these things in rebellion to God. Because you look at this in the context, you know how the story ends. The entire nation collapses, never to exist again. The entire nation collapses on itself. So you already know how the story ends. So you look along here, it's just a little snapshot of the path that the nation went down. And you have evil asshole who reigned for X amount of years. And he did all of this evil, did all this sin in the eyes of the Lord. But then, like, say, the next one would also be that same way. But then you would get a king, and he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. Except, they always left the high places. They left the high places where people worshipped idols and burned incense. And then the next one might do right. Except, they left the high places where the people worshipped idols and burned incense. And then things went further downhill, because the next guy was did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and things went downhill again. Does it rhyme for y'all too? Does this not sound like the quote unquote liberal? They're not liberals, but does this not sound like when you get, you know, commies out front leadership in your government, but then you get them replaced by conservatives? If you look back on history, you have an open commie leadership in the government, and you have all this crap rammed down your throat, and the country goes downhill, and then they elect a member of Timar. He's a conservative. And they never reverse it. They don't take down the high places where the people burn incense and worship idols. They just level it out. They conserve what's been gained, or actually, really, what's been lost in the society. And that rocks along. You might have two terms of it. Or the next guy might be a conservative representative, but they still maintain. They never, ever roll back. They never, ever say, oh, all these things that the commies have won over the past 10 years. Yeah, we're rolling that shit back. No, they maintain it. They keep the high places where the people worship idols and burn incense, which was not commanded by the Lord. And then you get replaced by another commie king in this instance, and things go back downhill. You see, the trajectory remains downhill. Now we're going to try to tie this all together, everything we've talked about. When you think about what is a nation? Is it lines on a map? Is it just simply the borders? If you pull out an atlas and say, well, this is the nation, here it is. Here's, I don't know, Britain. Here's Sweden. Here's France. Here's the United States of America. There it is. That's the nation. No, that's the territory that's currently drawn on the map. We all know that a nation is what? The people. So if the nation is the people, then the nation itself is like a living organism, like a living body. And the people are all its different parts. This is scripturally sound because we're told the church is that way. The church is not a building. The church is not a tent. The church is not whatever. The church is the body of believers, and every piece of that body has its own role to play. Some have a prominent role, but some have a not so prominent role, but that role is vital and it is important. We know this is scripturally sound. If the church then exists as a body of believers, then it makes sense that the nation exists as the body of the people. The nation is made up of the people. All of this, these people are a different part of the nation, each one carrying out a little bitty part. If you took and magically waved a wand and wiped out all of humanity out of the territory known as the United States of America, now there's no people there, it's just wilderness again. Would the United States of America exist? No, because there is no nation there. There is no people there. Do you understand what I'm saying? If a nation is a body, if a nation is a living thing in this context, then the more of the parts of that body that are sick, see, we get back to, we talk about people that are in sin and degeneracy. See, people run around and they want to run ahead of it and say, we got to fix the nation. We got to fix the nation. It's going downhill. But how the hell are you going to do that if you don't fix the people? You see what I'm saying? If you don't fix the people, which are the different parts that make the nation, then you're never going to fix the nation. You have to fix the people. You have to get people where they're not sick. It's like having a cancer spread. And you're like, we got to stop these. We've got to heal this person, but we're going to ignore the cancer. You can't ignore the sick parts of the body and heal the nation. You can't focus on the government. We got to just fix this government and the nation will be well. No, it won't. The government is as it is because the people are sick. They've turned their backs. They have abandoned God because there's been a failure of leadership, because people have to be led. The churches have failed to lead. The churches have failed to keep the flock centered on the truth, on Christ. The government has failed to lead. Why? Because it's inhabited by corrupt people.
The more corruption, the more sin, the more degeneracy that exists in the people, you aren't going to fix the nation as you view it as the government. It's flip a switch and Donald Trump's going to MAGA and fix this thing. Really? Donald Trump is going to suddenly fix the government, fix everything that's wrong in this government, when the government is nothing more, when the nation is nothing more than a reflection of the degenerate, sin-filled, sick population. From time to time, I will have non-believers essentially mock what we do here. And again, I always say we because I consider you, the listeners, the congregation here, just as much a part of this as the host. This is just my role to play, but you are all a part of what we do here. And I will have non-believers mock it. What are y'all doing? Look, I don't have visions of grandeur. I don't have visions that are we here by doing this show. We are saving the nation. It's always funny, people on the internet, that the ones that always step out and love to tell you, oh yeah, well, you're not doing anything, are always the ones that aren't like doing anything. You ever notice that? How so often people are, yeah, well, what are you doing about it? You know, physician, heal thyself. What the hell are you on about? I don't see you leading some revolutionary movement, which wouldn't work anyway, because why? You would just be leading an army of degenerates, an army of people who are sick. Oh, I have visions of grandeur, what we're doing here. This is our little small part. But by golly, we are trying. We are trying, Eve, just our little part to heal, to get the people where they're not sick. Even people that understand these things are wrong, even people that understand they hate what's happening in the country and all that, even still, they're suffering. There's sickness. If you don't leave, what if you tried to lead an army into a battle and 3/4 of your army had dysentery? Or hey, we outnumber the enemy army 2-1. We've got this match. We've got this battle won. Oh, well, yeah. I hate to tell you, but 2/3 of your troops have dysentery. Your army is fixing to get its ass kicked. Why? Because your army's sick. Save it. No, we're not single-handedly going to fix. We're just doing a show here. It's stupid. We're trying to get people back to the truth. We're trying to get people where they're healthy. No, it isn't going to fix the nation. If you had cancer and somebody came along, if you had terminal cancer and someone came along and said, well, I can't cure your cancer, but you know what? I've got a method that will get rid of, say, 1/3 of your cancer cells. Would you be like, get the hell out of here? You can't fix it all in one swoop. No, you'd be like, well, that's 1/3 less cancer I've got. I'll take it. I'd refuse to just throw my hands up and say, who cares? Who cares? We shouldn't. If we can't fix it in one fell swoop, then we shouldn't even try. Heaven forbid any of us should be so arrogant as to think that we could wield the power to fix the world around us. Who the hell are you? Who the hell am I to think such a thing? No, what you could do is speak the truth, try to hold to the truth as best you can, try to keep sin in your life to as minimal as you possibly can, keep returning to the Lord, keep seeking the Lord day in, day out, do what you can to help others to get out of the trap, to heal others of this destruction that has taken a hold of their life, their spirit, of their mind. Because every single part of the body of the nation, no matter how small, even if it's just an individual person, every single small part of the body of the nation that you can bring back to a healthy state, by extension of that, you return the nation to a healthy state. Yeah, sure, it's a teeny tiny part. Probably even go completely unnoticed by the enemy. Or maybe not. But either way, it is a fact that every person, any person, you can make spiritually stronger, more spiritually healthy. Well, glory to God, bring them away, pull them out of the pit, snatch them back out, and get them back to being healthy. Get them off of the sin addiction. You bring the nation as a body, as a living organism, to a closer state of healthiness. No, it's not going to change it in the big context, but if it happens enough, it will. But for that to happen, everybody has got to collectively do what they can. As we wrap up, remember, folks, we won this when Christ was raised from the dead. We won it. It's won. This is just the rest of it playing out. We know how it ends. The thing is, we got to do what we were supposed to do. You know, the talents entrusted to the servants while the master is gone. You don't want to be the guy who just buried it in the ground and didn't do anything. That's the guy he's not pleased with. You do what you can. The master had plenty of money, by the way. You know, he gave it to the three servants. This one invested it this way. This one invested it this way. He had plenty of money. The amount of money they got on return wasn't the issue. The issue was, what did they do with the opportunity given to them? What did they do with the time that they were given? Did they put their best effort forward to carry out the wishes of the master, even though they didn't necessarily understand why, or the reasoning behind it, or the what for? Or did they simply do as the wicked servant and bury it in the ground, hide it, and bide their time? Just ignore it. Just do nothing. We do what we can while we're here. That is our role. We've won this thing, but we have to do our part. You have to do your part in the meantime. You don't want to be the guy that just buried it in the ground and did nothing. Don't be defeatist. You're not defeated. They want you to think you're defeated, but you are not. Satan has not overcome you. You have overcome Satan through Jesus Christ. And that's where you are. That is the truth as a Christian believer. We've got to wrap up on that note. As usual, we ran long. Imagine that. I don't think the network even bothers anymore trying to be like, oh, well, Grandpa's show will only be 1 hour long. We can fit it right in. They know that isn't going to be the case. Anyway, we're going to wrap it up on that note. A final thank you to those of you who aren't shy and pay those tithes. We do appreciate financial support. And again, it's empowering for you. Google Ads doesn't shut off our financial support, but you, the listeners, are independent of their tentacles. So it is very much appreciated. And again, you can do that at the bottom of the page. We're going to wrap up. I appreciate you coming in. Appreciate you sitting down. Appreciate the fellowship. Appreciate the congregation. And we will congregate once again next week right here on Radio Albion for the Church of the Lampshade.